In this video, Dr. Neil Weinrib, Voluntary Associate Professor for Human Genetics at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine, answers questions asked by the audience during his CME NCPD-approved activity with i3Health, exploring treatment advances for acid sphingomyelinase deficiency in adults. Dr. Weinrib shares insights into screening for lysosomal storage disorders, genetic carrier testing, resources and advice for family and caregivers, the future of treatment with ellipidase alpha, and more. Are infants routinely screened for lysosomal storage disorders, or do these only get tested for after clinical suspicion? And at what age does this present in an infant?
So infants are, in some states, ASMD is included in the panels that the states are mandating be done, as some of the other lysosomal storage diseases as well. But this is restricted to only a relatively small number of states in the United States. And outside the United States, again, each country has its own regulations. I think by and large, fewer patients are screened as part of neonatal screening than obviously should be. You know, as I mentioned, the infants have the most severe degree of disease. So, early screening for such would be most important for picking up the infantile form. However, I really believe that these diseases should be screened for, since we see so many patients with the juvenile and certainly with the adult onset form who, as you mentioned, are not diagnosed until they're much older, and many of them already have suffered a good deal of either permanent injury or at least impairment of their ability to function. So it clearly would be a good idea to do neonatal screening. In terms of both pediatricians who are seeing patients, clearly getting a good family history is very, very important, since clearly there may be, I like to use this word clearly too much, but there are very well may be other children in the family who have either been diagnosed or are having symptoms. And again, that can be a tip off for the diagnosis. Again, the testing for the disease is really relatively easy to do. And I advise that one have a very high index of suspicion and a low tolerance for low tolerance in the sense of don't hesitate to order the blood test for both this or Gaucher disease early on. In this case, making an early diagnosis can make a big difference.
What kinds of conversations do you have with patients, family, and caregivers to keep them informed about the patient journey? Do you give them resources or advice?
Yeah, I think the educational aspect is very important. Aside from when I talk to a patient, aside from my own professional expertise, I do take advantage, as I mentioned, of the patient organizations, which do have educational materials available and which have been vetted and which carry accurate information. I'm sure you all know that once you deliver a diagnosis, either of this type to a patient, or especially to the parent of a child, they are most likely, almost inevitably, going to the internet to look for information. Unfortunately, some of the information that's out there is not accurate, or it's not adequately explained. So I think that we have to have conversations, and even reasonably lengthy conversations, with the patient or with the parents or both, to tell them, first of all, what they can anticipate from the disease, and then again, what they should expect from the treatment, the potential side effects that occur with the treatment, the need to continue on the treatment consistently and not miss doses. So yes, this all has to be a very intense and not only a one-time discussion, because again, I think all of us know that we think that we're doing a good job explaining things, but many times our listeners don't always fully comprehend everything that we say. It can be very overwhelming, certainly at the time of the first conversation. So taking the time to do this repeatedly and to check and make sure that things are going well is, again, very important. And I would say, unfortunately, it's that type of ability to do that is becoming difficult in the way medicine is currently being practiced, with the demands to see many patients quickly and to move a lot of patients through the system. So I guess I'm lucky that I grew up in a different era, and in my own personal practice, I was able to do this because eventually I specialized in these diseases and didn't have to carry the burden of a very large practice in other specialties, in other types of disease related to my specialty. So it is a challenge, but nevertheless, it needs to be done. And that's why, again, getting a team involved with this, other than just the physician, but getting nurses involved who do the infusions, other counselors who you can work with closely, who can take some of that burden off of the physician.
Is genetic carrier testing for ASMD recommended for Ashkenazi Jewish individuals?
It currently, to my knowledge, is on the panels that are being done for Ashkenazi Jewish individuals, which, by the way, has sort of gotten away from just a few diseases. And now there are a number of testings, just J-Screen is one of them, which is based at Emory, which actually tests Ashkenazi Jewish individuals for more than 200 potential genetic variants, and the list seems to grow year by year. So I'm not sure where that all goes, because eventually everybody's going to have some type of mutation. But yes, bottom line, they do test for ASMD type A and A genotypes.
Are there any estimates on the prevalence of the delayed onset type B variant of ASMD?
I think that there are estimates. As I said, it's probably fairly close to the original estimate that I gave, because the prevalence, they're the ones who will probably survive the longest. So in terms of prevalence, which is actually the number of patients who are actually out there, they represent a disproportionate part of the phenotypic spectrum. So again, it would come out to be sort of like maybe about 5 in a million population in any given particular country, but it may very well be higher than that. One of the results of having treatment available is that there's also a certain interest in trying to identify as many patients as possible, both for altruistic purposes, but as well as to be able to utilize the therapy and effectively for the manufacturer. So for both reasons, knowing that there is a treatment available should stimulate finding more patients through increasing awareness of the disorder. And we've seen that in all the other lysosomal storage diseases for which treatments have been available. Okay. I hope that answered the...
Has treatment with the lipidase alpha replacement therapy been researched in any other lysosomal storage disorders to see if it could improve the abnormal pathology of the lysosomes?
Well, in the other diseases, there are about 60 or so lysosomal disorders. There's no reason to, in the absence of having acid sphingomyelinase deficiency, there would be no basis for looking into expecting that lipidase would have a general improved effect on the stability of the lysosomes. So I'm not aware that anybody has actually looked at that. That would extend even to Niemann-Pick C, where there is some sort of crossover in terms of storage of cholesterol. But again, the problem is the defect in that disease is quite different from the defect in acid sphingomyelinase deficiency, but rather is related to the NCP, two genes which are associated with lysosomal transport. So I would think it's probably not likely that would be useful. What might be helpful, though, is investigating small molecules, which perhaps could cut down on substrate accumulation. That is actually being done in a number of other lysosomal storage diseases. where one there are a number of substrate reduction or substrate restriction inhibitors of the synthase enzymes, which seem to help and to be therapeutically effective. But since there's a specific one for sphingomyelinase, which is different than some of the other diseases, I suppose there probably has been some look at whether or not that could be applied. But again, sphingomyelin synthesis may not be as easy to decrease as some of the other ones because of its importance as a cell regulator substance, a constituent of membranes, and eventually even as regulatories of cell cycle and some of its breakdown products. So again, I think that I'm not aware of any small molecule study that is going right now, but that is a possibility. Ultimately, the gene therapy will probably start to attract more attention because it's already starting to be looked at Gaucher disease.